I've been reading self-help books and thinking about such things recently. People who are generally speaking ill, or who are at ease, people whose work is fine, whose marriage is dandy, who are happy and well-adjusted, I imagine they don't read self-help books. I don't need them, suppose. But for the rest of us, we have a problem in our life. We might turn to our friends. We might turn to our family. We might turn to the internet. Risky. Look out. Quality. Not assured, though that's true of our friends and family, too, isn't it? And if we happen to be a person who likes to learn about things, who likes to research and find things out, if we happen to be this kind of person, well, then we might go to the library or go to the Kindle store and start reading self-help books. Unitarian Universalists, generally speaking, like to read. We like to find things out. We like to improve our lives and the world. We like the truth in freedom. We like self-discovery. We seek these things. Unitarian Universalist ministers are this on steroids. So, like I said, I've been reading a lot of self-help books recently, and God, it's depressing. If only I had known that about myself, I could have avoided so much trouble, I think. Now I see why I keep doing that. You read the section about your particular personality type and you recognize every single word as true of yourself and realize I'm not that special. Of course, there's sometimes good news, tips and advice about how to move forward, wisdom and self-understanding that can help you avoid repeating the same old habits. We see that to move forward in our life, we have to do that thing, whatever that thing is, that we've known we had to do, but we didn't want to. 5 pieces of candy? Do I have to? If you want dessert, you have to eat your candy. Self-help is a different field than it used to be. Clichés and old advice is mostly out. Data and scientifically grounded research is in. Personal anecdotes are passé. Neurobiology is the rage. Like the 11 resolutions for a better you, the advice is always footnoted with this study and that study. I took out those references when I read it to you, but if you look it up online, you'll find all the studies they refer to, and you can go and read them. Of course, you can find a study to prove almost anything you want to claim. But if you find good sources, you'll find them referencing meta-studies and peer-reviewed journals and longitudinal analyses. And this is the promise of the new sciences, understanding the human brain, that as we know more about ourselves, we'll be able to make our life better, to be happier, to overcome bad habits, to become the kind of person that we want to be by shaping our brains. In short, we will be able to hack our life. In some cases, the new science teaches us things we didn't know before. But often, and of course I love this, it confirms old religious and philosophical wisdom. Things we've known and taught for thousands of years, but we forget, on accident or on purpose. Both ancient religious teaching and modern neurobiology and psychology have helpful things to say about how we can, in fact, live the life we want to live, how we can create and sustain habits that will give us more meaning and joy. And when those ancient understandings and modern understandings overlap, well, it seems to me then there's something worth paying attention to. So I'm not going to give you 11 resolutions, you've already got them, but I want to spend a moment talking about how to hack your life. Things I've learned from my own experience and my voluminous reading of sources old and new, something about body, something about mind, and something about spirit. So 3 things. Move your body, know thyself, rest in the grace of the world. Let me say that, though, that in this tripart division, I don't want to give the impression that body, mind, and spirit are separate. Indeed, this is what the ancient and the modern authorities agree on more than anything, that all the parts of ourselves are connected, that your mind and your spirit includes your body, that your body practice feeds your soul, that the habits of renewal in the religious life produce stronger minds and healthier bodies, that all these are deeply connected. So keep that in mind. Body. Move your body. Here's rule one. Don't exercise to get thin. Don't do it. It won't work, at least not over the long term. When I started running 18 months ago, I didn't do it to lose weight. That was not what I did. I stopped eating sugar to do that, or at least write less, anyway. Down 50 pounds since then, but I didn't do it. I didn't start running for that. I did it to save my soul and to calm my mind, to get out of the chair and off the couch and breathe the air and have 30 minutes to clear my head. The ancient spiritual teaching is that the body is a gift, something holy and lovely. This is the ancient understanding. The ancients moved. They walked, they played, they worked, chop wood, tend the garden, dance the circle. Some spiritual traditions, unfortunately, have distorted this and said that the body is unworthy, that it is sinful and to be feared. But we don't stand in that tradition. We stand in a tradition that celebrates the body as a gift. All bodies, young and old, all shapes, and with every opportunity and every limitation. And that bodies are meant to move, to enjoy the world, to dance and play. Don't move your body because it's going to get you somewhere. Move it because bodies love to move. Yes, even yours. Sometimes we forget, but that's what they're there for. The modern understanding of science is the same, that exercise produces chemicals and hormones that make you happier and calmer and more connected to yourself and the world, that reduces stress and produces joy. Maybe not on day one. That's an important proviso. The first time I tried to run, I just about collapsed onto the sidewalk. By about week three, I got my first runner's high. And wow, never looked back since then, although I don't get that every time. You have to find the type of movement that works for you. Running's not for everyone. Everyone's body is different and wants to move in different ways. Stick with it. Do something and stick with it. It will, when you get to the right place, make you feel more alive, more at peace, more joyful. Do it for yourself, not for someone else. Do it because your body is a gift, not a burden. Do it because it'll work. That's one. Two. Mind, know thyself. Know thyself. Those are the words over the entrance to the temple of Delphi in ancient Greece. It's also the sum of wisdom of the Buddhist and Taoist traditions, too. To know your own nature, to know your own mind. As Socrates so famously said, this and only this is wisdom, to know thyself. So much of the previous self-help literature, like so much of religious thought, is about trying to make you someone different. This is the way to live. This is the way to be in the world. And all the other ways are to be avoided. They say, this is what health looks like, not something else. But that's nonsense. There's no one model of health. There's no one way to be happy. No one best life, best marriage, best job, best way to parent. Everyone is different. The best of the new self-help literature is about something else. It's about understanding yourself, your type, your way of being in the world. Perhaps it's the Enneagram, a typology of 9 different ways of being in the world, each with its own variations. You figure out which type is most you. I'm a 5, but if you know the Enneagram, you probably already could guess that. And only you know yourself. And it gives you some clues about how to move toward a more healthy version of you, not a version of someone else, of you. Same goes for the Myers-Briggs typology, which is a similar kind of thing. Even more scientifically grounded than these two are approaches like attachment theory, grounded in neurobiology and how the human infant brain adapts to its environment. I found attachment theory to be a profound way of thinking about the self. Some of us have learned to attach to others with relative security. We don't really get stressed about it. It's no problem. We're attached. While others of us have learned to be anxious about our attachments. We always want to be closer. What are you doing? Come closer. While others have learned to be avoidant. We want space. Don't get too close. I need my space. So there isn't one piece of advice for all people. You figure out your attachment style and your partner's, if you have one, and then you get some clues, but the work isn't squeezing yourself into a template. It's putting tools in your toolbox. It's coming to know yourself better and better, to anticipate your reactions, to be clear about your needs, to be most authentically yourself, and to chart your own journey to more health and happiness. Because everyone's journey is their own, and so is everyone's destination. When you know yourself, you'll know your path and have the wisdom to take it as you become more and more the person that you were most meant to be. This is not easy. I want to be clear about that. That's not easy. It's easy to say. It's hard to do. But the journey to know yourself is the most powerful and fruitful journey you'll ever make. Spirit, rest in the grace of the world. I began this month, you might remember, at the end of that first sermon on renewing the spirit by quoting those words of Wendell Berry, as the choir sang and you heard. Despair for the world grows in me. Feel the day-blind stars above me lie in the grass. Rest in the grace of the world. And we are renewed. Renewed not by doing something, not by moving our body or knowing ourselves, as useful as those are, not by any of the thousands of other tips or resolutions or pieces of advice. Renewed by the grace of the world. Something larger than ourselves. Something we're a part of, but not in the least do we control or create. Breathe in peace. Breathe out love. Just breathe. Just breathe and rest in the grace of the world. See how beautiful the world is with its only wish that you belong. Body, mind, spirit, they're connected. When you move your body in the way that your body wants to move and you remember that your body is a gift, then you will feel more connected to yourself and the world. When you know yourself, who you are, you travel your own journey, get in touch with your own story, and you know yourself as a child of the universe, as stardust animated by the spirit of love, which is what each of us is, but each in our own way. When you rest in the grace of the world, you have a chance to remember that life is not a project, it's a gift. Your body, your mind, your spirit. What neuroscience teaches us, what Susan talked about in the chalice lighting about saying positive things, the ancient prophets have always known. Those who see life as a gift, who practice the habits of gratitude, who say each morning, thank you, each night, thank you, each bite, thank you, each breath, thank you. Those who live with thanksgiving are happier and healthier and more resilient. They can renew their lives, for they see that all life is beautiful and that all is possible. The ironic and powerful truth of the new self-help, the self-help based on science, is that it isn't about self-help at all. It really isn't about hacking your life, changing the code. It's about self-awareness. It's about living your life, yours, fully. With gratitude for all that is your life, all of it, with knowledge of ourselves and the way we enter the world, our own needs, fears, passions, and pathways. With joy in our own body, finding ways to feel good and alive. We're not dough. We don't need cookie cutters. Your journey of renewal to come alive to your body, your mind, your spirit is your own journey. And this is good news, but it's harder too. When you want to figure out how to live your best life, you can't look to someone else. You have to look in your own heart. There are no easy answers because the answer is yours. There are some tips, some ideas from folks who are like you and have discovered things about themselves that you can learn from. We are not without guides and mentors and wisdom, but you need to seek out the wisdom that resonates with you, that speaks to you most clearly. Know yourself and trust your deepest heart and clearest mind. And know that you, no matter what, have a place in the universe, in the grace of the world. I invite you thus to the life of renewal. Come to this life from a place of gratefulness for all that is. Your body is a gift. Live in it with joy. Your mind is a gift. Come to know it with wisdom. And all the world, the spirit of love and life, is given freely to each and all, to you. So breathe and rest in this grace and be free. You don't need another self-help book, and neither do I. I'm done. You're loved as you are, as you are. Your journey is beloved, and you can make the journey. Your life, all life, is a gift freely offered, and we are called with this gift to live our own best life, our own, and you are loved as you are. And when you know that, and feel that, and sing that, then your journey begins again. And from there, you can turn to build the common good, which is part of our journey too, for we are not for ourselves alone, but for each other. Begin in gratitude. Journey in love, live in joy, end in grace, and let's sing for all that is our life. We sing our praise and our thanks. I invite you to rise.